It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, 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 Thunderstruck. We're not afraid here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. And in studio today, we have Ed Vallejo. Let me introduce you to Ed. Ed is one of the activists here in Arizona. He was head of the meetup for the Ron Paul Revolution. And you may recognize him from various YouTubes and emails and a post that he's put up, and certainly in a lot of movies. And we have Jack Gregson. He's coming in and say, yo, what's up, too? I tell you what's been going on today. We've been doing a lot of work, and we've been painting and making little boxes and all that kind of stuff. And we had four young Hispanic kids came in. They heard about the workshop from some of the people that have been activists. They're out of school now, so they got time. They got time, and they want to do what? Well, you know, I would imagine they were probably like 16 years old, 17, around in that. And they've been down at the Capitol building with a lot of the people that are protesting the immigration bill. And the one thing that was of interest is the influence you can have on young minds. They know something's wrong. They're upset. But direct their energy. And how do we direct it? Well, they're going to do what they want to do, and we're here to let them do what they want to do. They got a dose of the workshop, and the imagination soars. They went, I don't care what you do. There's all the stuff you can do. Go rock and roll and be free. But then, of course, we wanted to explain to them, you know, our issues on this immigration law had nothing to do with probably a lot of the things that they were thinking of. We're going, this is all about national ID. This is all about a national database. It's all about that they're going to be, you know, the Palestinians of Israel. They're going to get their special alarm band and ID and license plate and whatever is going to happen, go on there. And they understood, you know, they're citizens, but maybe their parents or grandparents aren't, or they got friends that aren't, and, you know, didn't even have an accent. I don't even know if they spoke Spanish, you know, but they know that they're going to be targeted. They know their friends already have. They understand. So what do? We say you're too brown to hang around. You know, we got officers come, you know, get on the ground. Where's your ID? Got your birth certificate on you? You know, so they understand, and they're motivated, and they came by. We gave them like the 10-minute tour and talked to them, and now what? Are they going to get involved in the politics here? They're going to target on some of the things. We told them some of the things that we were going to do starting in June, and they're excited. You know, you talked to them a little bit, Ed. What did they have to say?
Well, I talked to them after they left. I wanted to get their impression, whipped out my video camera, and I asked them, you know, what's your impression? They said, oh, it's just fantastic, and they were just gushing. And I said, well, you know, before you didn't have, you know, very much resources. Now you have a television studio and radio podcasting, and you can make signs, you could do whatever you want to. You know, how does that make you feel? And the one young kid looked at me and he says, feels like I just came into heaven.
I'm really excited that these young people have an opportunity to understand that there's someone in support of them being able to say what they want. Without even, you know, criticizing what we're saying, look, this is what our position is. This is what we want to talk about. This is what we're doing. But, you know, I don't even care what you want to do. You know, just as long as you have the ability to express yourself, and you know from past experience, we'll influence them. You know, with the, you know, some of the issues that, you know, where do we overlap? Where can we have some fun? Where can we have a shared interest in freedom? And this is how you do it. And these young men and women, they're good-looking kids. I mean, they're nice kids, and they're motivated enough that they're paying attention. They want to see what's going on. And the gentleman that told them, his name's Israel Cohen Puentes, and he was a Desert Storm vet that's down there working on this issue too. And it's been very effective in our being able to inject this issue, because my whole point has been that the immigration issue has been manufactured. I mean, of course, there's illegal immigrants. I mean, that's, you know, and there's an issue with people taking advantage of the welfare system, but I don't see where they're from as the problem. It's the welfare state. That's the problem. I want to make sure you understand. I'm not about you having, you know, equal access to ripping me off. You know, this is that we get rid of the welfare state. That's not what this is about. I don't want to even get into it. It's not about immigration. You know, that's just the Trojan horse. That's what this thing is. That's what's being used to try and make sure that they get what they want. And what they've always wanted is to number the cattle. And when you're not productive, this morning we had Jane Orient from the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, and we're talking about the health care bill. And you read that, and there's all kinds of, you know, when Obama said we're going to save $500 billion, half a trillion dollars we're going to save by having, you know, Obamacare. From what? Well, we're going to eliminate waste. What does that mean? I know what that means. That means, you know what? You're too old, too sick, too poor, too something to get access to this procedure that you need. You don't think so? Happens in all socialized countries. You know, then they start taking blood samples to determine you're eating wrong or you're not able to get this because of, I don't know, because you smoke or you eat too much trans fats. Or, I mean, it's major social and economic engineer as if we were what? Cattle, livestock, sheep. And when you're not productive for the machine, what are they going to do? They're going to put you in the chute. It's time for the slaughtering. So I know they were overwhelmed. I don't think they expected what they came in, because what happened is Israel came in and made some signs. I don't even know what they said. You know, he came in, made use of the facility, made some signs and stencils, and, you know, did something in a couple hours, and he went down there holding whatever and told these, hey, man, you guys want, where'd you do that? How'd you do it? Well, this Freedom's Phoenix thing. Go down there and talk to them. They came in. Oh, you know, we sparked. You know, they were encouraged. What will they do? I don't know. What if I don't care? What if they just get excited about freedom, the ability to express themselves, and they get immersed in the culture that we have here, in the love-illusion that, you know, they've been exposed to, and they start understanding the fundamental principles of freedom? Will that affect them for the rest of their lives and their friends and their parents and their grandparents and their community? What if we start giving them the cards that we did by 24,000 business card size things that we did? That was the Philosophia de la Libertad. You know, but what that is a flash animation that explains, you know, self-ownership. What if you can infect an entire generation that's ready to be? Where do they find the truth? Well, we're going to try and share it with them. And beginning of June, we're busy for the next couple of weeks. We let them know they can do what they want. You know, we'll make sure they got access to facilities and how they work, how they make signs, how they do stencils. You know, and Ed's the, you know, the king of that. So, you know, you're going to help them out and get them started?
Oh, you bet. I told them, here's my cell phone number. I got keys to the place. You ever come down here and nobody's here, you give me a call. I'm not that far away. I'll be more than happy to come down here and assist you in any way I possibly can. And I can see the one kid's eyes really light up because he says, well, I'm an artist and I have a hard time trying to find a place to do my art. I said, here you go. Here you go.
The only criteria that we have is that I go, look, man, don't be bringing down your crap. I don't need a bunch of friends and down, you know, and the music's blaring there and they think this is a honeycomb hideout. No, heck no. You'd be treated like adults. You're dealing with adults. Go be adult. And of course, so I didn't even think about it until they left. You know, Ed, he's got his 45 on his hip, you know, so 40. Like, 40. Yeah, whatever, 40. So they're going, yes, and boss, we be good. Jack Gregson was down too, helping with the project that we're doing for the national convention, making these little boxes and so on. But Jack was down here, and he had something to say. What were you sharing with him?
I wanted to let him know.
Oh, wait a minute. Let's go ahead. I don't have that mic on. Go ahead and use that one.
The thing that I wanted to get across to them was the fact that I don't want to be a slave. And because I don't want to be a slave, I don't want them to be a slave. That's the whole thing. And the people like Mr. Pierce, our state assemblyman, want us to be slaves. They want a national ID card. And I don't want them to have that, and I don't want to have it. I don't want my family to have it. And I wanted to express to them that as Americans, we have a lot in common with Mexican people.
Yes. And we have it in common.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Love ain't the same on the south side of town. You could look, but you ain't gonna find it around. It's the same old story, same old song and dance, my friend. It's the same old story, same old story, same old song and dance.
Yeah! Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, in studio. We get the benefit of Jack Gregson. He happened to be by. We're going to throw him in the studio. We had another gentleman. Israel was going to come by, but he said, hey, man, I got to stay down here at the Capitol. There's stuff happening. We'll find out about that later, I'm sure. But I wanted to, he did have the presence of mind to, you know, send some youngins down here to go be free. Now, I know a lot of the audience, who are you cheering for? Because it's a cheerleader. You know what it reminds me of? It was a South Park. I know your daughter, why do they watch South Park, you know? And my wife hates South Park. She hates Family Guy. She thinks they're irreverent as heck. Just, she'll go on, we're in bed, and she's flipping the channels, and she goes like, she goes, no. Yeah, I got to go wash my hair or something, you know? So we turned it on, and there was this one episode that they did. It was a couple of years ago. It was when... Yeah, it was during the 08 convention elections, I think. There was P. Diddy is on there, vote or die, vote or die, vote or die, you know, with bad words. And what happened was they were voting in their school for their new mascot. It was going to be, I don't know, a turd sandwich or a tampon or something like that. It was something stupid, you know. Of course, that's what they do. And he's like, I don't want to vote. This is what I get. This is my choice. Vote, 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 vote. Then at the end of it, it was, finally they get them to vote or something. Then it didn't matter. And then they got to keep their cow as the mascot because, you know, PETA was the one that was saying they couldn't have a cow as their mascot anymore. And then, you know, a bunch of people went in and laid waste to the PETA camp or something. So then it wasn't an issue anymore. So they got to keep their cow. And he goes, so my vote didn't matter anyway? Because it was a tie and he got what he wanted. And they go, it doesn't matter anyway. And he's like, oh, this voting thing. And it's just so, there's so much of that going on. And to have it permeate pop culture to where you have people making fun of these kinds of choices, the whole process. And a lot of people that are watching Fox News or cable news or reading the newspaper, they don't understand. There's an entire generation and adults that understand this is so, we're just being programmed. And if you didn't listen to this show or others like it or something, you wouldn't know. You're just going by the bullet points. You know, it's this or this. Well, the same thing is going on with this immigration issue. I've known enough that I was willing to put my neck out on the line on this thing and make this an issue. I go, yeah, you want to make an issue? Let's make it an issue. We had Gary Franchi from Restore the Republic on yesterday, and I had talked to him in the last week or something, or days ago. And what had happened is one of the activists, a guy is an author on the site, and another gentleman, Jeff Greenspan, was a Southwest coordinator for Ron Paul's campaign. He was actually a salaried individual, and he works in Campaign for Liberty Now. Well, he understood what was going on. You know, he's like, oh, no, because this is what got him interested when he was an IT guy. I mean, he's a computer geek, and he worked out of Philadelphia. He was in the early 90s, mid-90s. He worked for the state of Pennsylvania, getting their database on their motor vehicle department and all that kind of stuff in compliance with going to the federal government. As he said, he's going, what the heck am I doing? What? They're going to what? So they can what? You know, this has been going on forever, and it is pressure from what? You know, you have all these different secret handshake groups and everything. Everybody's all whining on about going, oh, it's population control. They want to have lower population, more control in the population. You know, oh, that's conspiracy. I'm like, yeah, well, people that know that are actually the implementation of these different programs, you know, they see it. You know, they wonder, how is it you know all this stuff? How do you? Because libertarians are everywhere. You know, we're the ones doing the coding. We're the ones that are the golf caddy. We're the ones in the, you know, the restroom valet. We're the waiter. You know what? As you're sitting there doing this, talking about how you're going to rule the universe, there's somebody sitting there that's invisible people to you. Now, I tell you, now I tell you when you become invisible. When you're a middle-aged, balding, overweight individual in the mall, you're invisible. Nobody sees you. You just go anywhere. You stand anywhere. You can listen in. It's just amazing. It's like you're not there. It's like you're a six-year-old kid. You know, they're just sitting there. I remember when I was young and my parents and family and their friends are going on. I'm saying, ooh, we learned everything. All the kids start comparing notes. Well, that's what happens. I mean, if you're going to be secret, you better be secret. It's super uber secret because, I mean, you know, there's always somebody listening. And if you're using electronics, you know, then the big bad guys are. Well, Jeff was there doing this type of IT work, information technology is what that stands for. I found that out. They doing a lot of computer work, software, and so on, bringing Pennsylvania up to speed to be able to download this, all the information the state has accumulated so it can be available to the federal government. And he's going, wow, what the heck? So it kind of sent him down a path. Well, he was originally from Utah. You know, a lot of his friends in there, you know, he knows someone, what do they call it, the Examiner, or there was some other, there's a website that we post some of the stuff from that they send. They do kind of this conspiratorial stuff. And he's, the more you know about it, the more you know they're really doing it. And I came at it from a different perspective, from commerce, you know, how they were changing laws on import and export and all that kind of stuff. So part of that was also they needed perfect information. You know, that's our goal. They want every bit of information that's generated so that they can what? You know, just like what they're doing with the internet marketing people. You use Google email, they know everything. And that was a YouTube that we had on last night. I watched it last night. Mike Duggar is probably on the front page still. And it was an YouTube done by a professor in New York City. He was talking to a hacker convention. And he was talking to these guys that wrote all this code that allowed for this stuff to happen. He goes, we got to change this. You know, we'll talk about it in the next segment. But, I mean, he's going, look, we can see what they've done. What we did originally, the internet was made to where it was just you were the server. It was just a highway. There was no stops on it. There was no toll roads or anything. It went from somebody's computer and it went through these different nodes and it wound up on your computer. Your computer was the server. Well, they go, no. We have the internet service providers. We got to have a way station. We got to have a stop. We have some place that it goes through, and then you kind of subscribe through them. Then it comes to you. Well, they log all the information, every bit of information, every website you've gone to, what kind of porn you like, you know, what kind of firearms you're interested in, what kind of drugs you want to know a little bit about, how to grow whatever, you know, you're ordering your grow lights, you know, for your tomato plants or, you know, whatever. I mean, and they take all this information and they bring it together to the point that they already know what you're going to do before you even do it. So when you get a Gmail account or Yahoo or something like that, and this is a lot of the criticisms of Google right now, you have a Gmail account, and I've seen this happen. You send a Gmail account, email to someone. You say, hey, man, I'll be over. We're going to play poker and whatever, and I'll be there, you know, whenever. in the email that he replies to, he said, yeah, okay, when you come by, make sure you get whatever. In the bottom, there's an ad for a poker gaming place on between you and the place that you're going to go. It's marketing. They're already marketing towards you before you even know you need to go. Well, I go, okay, I guess I need to stop by and get some more poker chips. Oh, cool. Thank you, Google. That was nice of y'all. But how do they do that? It's because you give up all your privacy to be able to have that kind of service. Where does that information go? Where does it get accumulated? Who gets access to it? It's all out there. What happens when you advocate for a little box? Now we have the technology and the software that you are the server. It's just imagine a little cube. You know, it's a Rubik's Cube. That is your computer. It has all kinds of little USB plug-in kind of stuff. It, you know, you get all your torrent stuff, all information accessible, and everything. And you keep all your logs. You know where you went. And nobody else does. That's what's coming. That's the attempt. This is where you start to see why government will make laws making possession of certain things, like this box, illegal. Possession of information that hasn't been cleared. Possession of data. You know, this is how it happens. There is a big, big battle on much larger scale coming that a lot of people don't understand. You know why? Because people are starting to find out the commonality they have with each other and just wanting to be left alone. You think it's a simple thing that's not a threat to the man? That's the only threat to him. We'll talk about it more when we come back.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there. Telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah, stop, children. And they stopped by, and they visited. And I think they were as impressed as I would have been had I been when I was their age. You know, this has been such a trek for myself and my friends and family and so on for 20 years, and it hasn't changed. You know, Jack's gone through the same kind of thing. His family been exposed to the ups and downs of real estate since for generations, you know. And so go ahead and, you know, for the audience, I think this is an interesting story. I mean, when you knew that it was going to start going, you've been through this before. What year was it that you decided to sell all your properties?
October 2004.
Oh, you missed the peak, man.
No, we didn't sell then.
When did you sell?
Spring 2006, right at the peak.
Aren't you the smart one? And what did you do? Did you go and, you know, buy peanut butter?
No, went out to celebrate after it was over, you know, and so we rented a nice big house, took a year just to relax and just kind of decompress and everything because it was very stressful for the entire family, you know. I think my wife thought I was nuts. She was convinced I was nuts, you know. I mean, it was stressful. She left right when I was selling the house. She threatened me with divorce. She walked out for 6 weeks.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You crazy, man.
She thought I was nuts.
Well, is she, you know, coming around, or she didn't care, or you just made her feel bad anyway, and, you know, kind of, I mean, what?
No, I told her I loved her, and I explained the situation, and I just was calm about it, and I was loving about it. And, you know, we had two kids, and I didn't want us to get divorced, and, you know, and...
Well, I knew she grumbled. I didn't know she was threatening you with divorce over this thing.
Oh, she walked out March 1st, 2006. I put it on the market a couple days later.
Oh, you're killing me, man. So when did she start to realize that, I don't know, you're acting in her self-interest and you're probably saved your family's finances forever? I mean, because you had a few homes, didn't you?
No, that was back in California.
Oh. So here you sold it, and you were in Ahwatukee. Ahwatukee is a nice area in South Phoenix in the mountains there, and so it's got its own little enclave. It's kind of those circle drives, you know. It's like a Sun City retirement kind of thing for not retired people.
Yuppies.
And, yeah, it's a yuppie thing. And those are expensive homes. So if you sold there at the peak, man, you ka-chinged out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my realtor probably thought I was nuts, but I explained the situation to her in November, first week of November in 2005. I explained why I was doing it, the reasoning behind it, what was going to happen. And I explained that to her again when I signed the documents to sell the house. I'm sure she still remembers the conversation because I just looked her direct in the eye and just told her what was going to happen, how far housing prices were going to fall, and how many houses were going to default and go into foreclosure. And all of it's come true.
Wow. Is there on the horizon a time for us to buy back in? I mean, you know, this, you know, we live very poorly. Now, my wife and I and our kids and everything, we very modestly. Imagine, you know, four kids, two dogs. For 9.5 years, we lived in a two-bedroom triplex while we were doing all this up until we got our restaurant open and going. Then we moved and rented a home. And we had, had a pool and everything. We, you know, increased our standard of living a little bit, but we wouldn't go into debt. We drove used cars, that kind of stuff. And now we live in a nice neighborhood, but it's, it's probably the cheapest home in the neighborhood. We pay, you know, I'll tell you this. Central Phoenix, the homes next to me were going for $320,000+. Now they're selling for about $150,000. And I'm going, wow. And we've been paying $1,000 a month rent the whole time. Because it's some people that want to retire back into their home that live in California that have the home that we're in. One of these days they're going to be going, it's time to get out. We're coming in. We've been there probably almost 10 years. So, but think about it. 10 years, that means that I've probably been paying in rent $100,000+, you know, maybe $120,000, something like that. But, you know, I would have lost that much in the decrease in the value if I bought it.
Easily.
Yeah, you see my point? And plus you have the, you know, the freedom to move and, you know, whatever. I can tell you this. I could put all that money. I wouldn't have had any equity. And I paid interest to say, ooh, you know, and all the property taxes and the other stuff. Plus, the big reason, I tell you what it was, because you were so politically active, you don't want to have something they can take from you. You know, I've been very conscious of that. I'm just like, look, you know, you can reco me all you want. you can have my butterfly collection. I mean, you know, so what? So this is, it's just a choice that we've made. But over the years, we accumulated some food. You know, that was a big thing with my family. My father and mother, they just instilled, you know, it's time, because my mother's side of the family, all Mormon. You know, my sister's Mormon. They definitely into this, you know, you need to have some grain set aside. So that was normal for us. You know, I felt uncomfortable if I was dependent on the grocery store shelves. So, you know, that's just instilled on us. And we did that with our family and kind of encouraged them to buy stuff, put under the bed, that kind of deal. So, yeah, at least you got a month's worth of, you know, I don't starve. So this is, and then I didn't know any better. I just bought silver. Kind of figured, you know, how stupid could it be? You know, I get a couple of little gold every now and then. You know, I would do trade out with some people. They give me these little tenth, you know, ounce things that we used to have a bunch of those. And then whenever I could, we always just in libertarian community, we just, you know, trade out in silver. You know, some of the guys that help do different thing, I'll throw them a silver, you know, medallion. You know, I guess here's your silver. We just, that's how we live now. All of a sudden, I'm not throwing out nothing, man. That's just not conversation piece or educational or just for grins and giggles, better than not. It's like, man, every one of those is going to be worth lots of money. So I remember our kids, we used to buy them for Christmas when we started thinking about this, 4 or 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when they were teenagers, they were just starting to get old enough, in their stockings, I would get them a 10-ounce bar of silver. I just asked my daughter, I go, yeah, you guys still have that? Yes, we do. All of a sudden, you know, it's like, you know, your wife going to you, my kid's going to, you know what? Dad's not crazy anymore. You were crazy before. You just got smarter as time went on. So this is where I'm hoping you're prepared. And there's still time. You know, yeah, silver took a dump, and gold did too. It went down, I don't know, a lot, $100 or something. It don't mean nothing. You know, I remember when gold used to be four digits. I mean, you know, it's going to be like that. So I'm hoping you guys are taking this seriously. Jack did. I remember, when did you get this information? Weren't you listening to my show or Charles's show and stuff? I mean, how did you even know about this stuff?
Well, I was listening to you, and I was listening to Charles. And, you know, the thing that I did is I started looking at the websites that you guys were looking at. And the first thing that really clued me in was an article on Lou Rockwell. And when I read that article in October 2004, the lights clicked on. And I realized that there were so many houses that were going to default that it was 10 times worse than anything I had ever been through back in the late 80s, early 90s in Southern California. And let me tell you, that was horrific. It gave me gray hairs. It gave me double pneumonia three times, and I wouldn't wish that on anybody. And I didn't want to go through that again. I mean, you can only do that so many times, live through that sort of stressful experience, and you realize, I am not going to live through this again. It'll kill me. I have to do something different. So I got ahead of the curve. I realized the demographics were bad. I realized the funding for these houses were bad. It was a lie. And it was a lie from the day that George Bush created the Ownership Society, May 17th, 2002. And you can still find that on YouTube.
Well, tell us about that. What was it?
Basically, George Bush came out with the idea of helping Fannie and Freddie get people into the idea of buying a home even if they couldn't afford it. People that were minimally able to afford it. They were right on the edge. And so they were going to take
a program.
Yeah, they were going to take a program called the Ownership Society and basically fund people getting in with 2, 3, 4% down payments or no down payments.
And guaranteed no equity, a little blip, they build the bubble, and then you're screwed. And it was how they wanted to come out of the dot-com fall. And then, of course, 9/11 happened, so that was justification to do anything they wanted. And they did this, and what did they do? They plummeted interest rates, free money, going in, buy. It was guaranteed to happen. We were screaming about it at the time. All the libertarian blogs, all the libertarian pages, Lou Rockwell, Freedom's Phoenix later, our radio shows, because we knew it was coming. Well, it's here. When we come back with Jack Gregson, we're going to tell you just how bad it's gotten in the last couple of days.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Information that we're going to share with you today. Jack Gregson, I'm up here loading up the today's show and everything with some of the stuff that we're talking about and putting it up. And I got to tell you this one. You won't believe this. All right, here we go. Completely synthetic life form, Cynthia, is alive and breeding. Okay. Panacea or Pandora's Box? The J. Craig Venter Institute in Synthetic Genomics. Genomics Incorporated announced the laboratory creation of the world's first self-reproducing organism whose entire genome was built from scratch by a machine. We're saved! And this is just stupid. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the movie iRobot with Will Smith. And he goes into this one factory and he sees there's nobody in there. And it's just robots making robots. And he goes, well, that's just stupid. So now we have life creating its own life. And then we'll put brakes on it or something. Then they talk about that in Jurassic Park. Oh, yeah, the lysine deficiency kind of thing. You know, if we don't give them the lysine, then they'll just die. If we, you know, kind of, yeah, and then they find it some other way. I mean, life has, man, you go creating life. Oh, man. What kind of perfect knowledge you got on that? We're so screwed. You know, just because we can do something, should we? And who, whatever, that's going to come around and bite us in the butt. But what I was looking at in here, there's some other things going on. You were telling me about this before. Benzene gas, plans to evacuate the population of the Gulf of Mexico. Benzene, incredible amounts of benzene are being released into the atmosphere, and it's clear and present danger not only for the old and young people with respiratory problems, but the general Gulf population as a whole. This is something that you've been looking at. Don't you have some kind of link to the oil industry somehow? You know somebody, something?
Yeah, I know somebody. I don't talk to him anymore, but I do know him.
You know, this. I remember you talking back when I was doing my show. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. We got to tell the audience about this. Are you willing to talk about it? You want to talk about it?
No, I don't want to talk about it.
There was, I mean, let's put it this way. Jack knew enough that, you know, there were black navigators out front. Okay?
It's true.
You know, the men in black with little curly things in their ears. All right? So he's calling Ernie, man. I don't know what to do. I got it covered, man. You know, so what do we do? There's used to be the state chair of the Libertarian Party. He is a postal carrier in your neighborhood. And I called him. I said, just go by and see if something's there. Take some pictures. He goes, yep, there they are. Taking pictures. We talk about it on radio, put it up on Freedom's Phoenix. I'm like, you guys want to play? You want to play? And then it kind of went away. But, man, they definitely wanted to make sure that you were not to share the stuff that you knew. So we don't think we know. We know, okay? Ugh. So anyway, so Jack is, you know, on the defense, man. He's helping. I know he took care of himself, so he's waiting this thing out. He did okay. He got out at the top, and he's just waiting. There might be deals to be had later. But, you know, he had some interest in this oil spill. What'd you find out?
Well, I think they're covering up a tremendous amount. They really don't want the public to get a sense of how serious this situation is. It appears to be uncontrollable. They don't have a way of fixing it right now. It may take 2 or 3 months. We may go into the hurricane season. And this stuff is down there in gigantic plumes, multiple plumes. Think of ribbons of oil, 30 miles long, 10 miles wide, 300 feet thick. And this is really nasty stuff. So it's killing all sea life it comes in contact with. It's full of benzene. It's full of all sorts of toxic chemicals.
Yeah, how the heck does even a swordfish or a shark swim through that?
They don't.
I mean, I'm just, I don't know how the dynamics, I don't think in throughout our history, there's never been anything even close to this, has there?
No. It's basically probably 5 or 6 times worse at this point than the Valdez incident.
No, that's just what's hitting the coast. That's not what's waiting.
No. And this stuff is just waiting to be stirred up by the hurricane season. It's down there, and it'll be, you know, it'll rise up in columns when we get the hurricane season. And this stuff is making the fishermen sick who are being paid very low wages to clean this stuff up. They're getting sick.
So the people that lost their jobs as fishermen and so on, they're going, oh, yeah, we got a job for you, you know, clean up oil.
And they're getting sick, really sick.
You know, we saw this happen. I remember it was World Trade Center. You know, a lot of the guys that went into work and helped, they started getting really sick, you know, and they're going, I remember Giuliani. He'd go in and it's, nope, EPA said it's all fine, it's great, and you don't got to wear a mask, and it's all good. And then they got sick.
Yeah. The head of the EPA, Christy Todd Whitman, former governor, she told them it was okay. You didn't need a mask. Everything was fine. Those people are still dying.
I'm, you know, that's one of the things that really prompted a lot of New York, the We Are Change guys, you know, Luke and those guys doing a lot of the lies after the effect, you know, after what happened, all the government deception and everything that caused more death. You know, it may even be more death than the people that actually got killed in the collapse.
I think it is.
You know, so this is, I mean, just looking at the news here on Freedom's Phoenix, we got Haitian farmers, you know, committing to burning the Monsanto hybrid seeds. You know, what has happened is Monsanto has sent them free seeds. They're going, here, yeah, we love you. You know, get hooked. Because, you know, once you start doing it and the seeds get on an island like that, they'll infect and cross-pollinate with everything else, and they claim a patent violation. Say, nope, you know, got to pay us. And it won't grow without our Roundup? Oh, sick. Sick, 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 sick. Oh, what's this other one you put up? The FDIC is $20.7 billion in the hole? What's that about?
That's something I've known about for quite a long time. They've been running a deficit. They pushed forward the dues by member banks from all the way from the year 2013 forward to today to try and make up a massive deficit. And they're still in the hole.
I don't even understand what you're saying. They pushed up a what?
The members, you know, of the banking community that want to have protection for their depositors up to $250,000,
okay,
they have to pay dues to help cover losses. Well, they have had so many defaults by so many banks, over 70 this year, over 130 last year, that the FDIC, which covers your deposit, is broke. Okay, they have a deficit. There is no money to cover your deposits. That's why they're only closing 3 or 4 to 7 banks a week, never more than 7 banks. But we know, and Meredith Whitney came out this last week and stated, don't get near bank stocks. Don't get near them. Stay away. Because she knows 40% of the banks are going to go under within the next 18 months. And it could be yours.
Okay. No, but they went to them and they said, we want future dues.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's like if I belong to the country club of De La whatever and I pay my monthly or yearly, whatever, they go, you know, we need your next 3 years worth, right? Oh, not later.
Right. In advance. That's how desperate they are. They have no money, Ernie. And the thing is, that's why they cannot close banks faster than they are. And I mentioned that 2 months ago. They can't do it because they're broke.
Okay. So how can they not? These banks just continue. What? They're zombie banks? It's like Japan or something?
It is. It's exact same syndrome as Japan 20 years ago. They're zombies. And they should be closed, but there is no money to close them. And the thing is, once the American people get a sense of how dire the situation is, they're going to run to their banks and they're going to pull their deposits. It's called a run on the bank. We had that back in the 30s, and it's going to take place again. You have to realize there's over 775 problem banks, and over 40% of them are going to close of the 8,000.
Well, the thing is when they close them and they take them over, what they're saying is that, you know, that costs money. We got to, like, you know, do something, you know, so we can't do it, so we're not doing it.
Right. There's no money.
So it's a zombie.
It's a zombie.
Need more brains. I need to get some brains.
And it's only going to get worse. You have 14% of mortgages are in default. 14%. It's 30% higher than a year ago, and they keep trying to sell us this propaganda.
Green shoots.
Yeah. Obama came out earlier this week and said, well, Americans, it's turning around. It's turning around. It's definitely turning around. And I listened to that, and Ernie, I can't listen to the man. Everything out of his lips is a lie.
Well, you know, we're looking at, you have, my wife put this up. Stocks extend week-long tumble, euro slides, U.S. treasuries rise. Okay, they rally. Why? A week-long sell-off in stocks deepened as reports in the U.S. raised doubts about the strength of the economic recovery, and leaders in Europe struggled to contain the region's debt crisis. Now, this is what I've done at the advice of, you know, people that I trust. They're like, yeah, Ernie, let me tell you what you need. You want to know what's going on? You want to see what's really happening? You want to look at one thing? And I'm like, what? And they go, the 30-year treasury bond. And I'm like, why? He goes, because they'll tell you what's, you know, in comparison to the rest of the planet, what's going on. Well, it's plummeted. The stock, I mean, the interest rate that they are giving for 30-year treasuries was as high as 4.9 or something like that. I remember it was 15% back in the early 80s, which is what they need to do if they're ever going to get out of this thing. But we'll talk about it, what's happening when we come back. It's getting nasty. You know, this is, well, I tell you what's going on now. It plummeted. It went down to 4.14%. What does that mean? It means that they are able to reward you for investing in U.S. treasuries less because you want them more. You know, I need a flight to security, a flight to safety. I need to get out of something else. I see the U.S. dollar as better than what? The rest of the world. So it's a race to the bottom. It's a race. It's a race. And so what happens when it goes? Is it, the U.S. dollar reigns supreme down at the bottom of the barrel? What does that mean? Whew. We'll talk about it when we get back. I don't understand it either. Here we go.